You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuckers Bryant. That makes this Stuff You Should Know.
I wonder what that sounds like to people who listen to it at double speed. Might sound like your normal voice.
Right, yeah. You know, that was my impression of somebody.
I'm going to go with Vincent Price.
No.
Okay.
Edgar Oliver. It was a great Edgar Oliver, terrible Vincent Price.
Who's Edgar Oliver?
Edgar Oliver, he's a storyteller on The Moth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he sounds like exactly like that. You got to check his stuff out. He's awesome.
Is he a horror? Is he like...
No.
Anything wrong with him?
Nope. Well, yeah. I mean, he talks like that, but other sure. than that, he's an awesome dude. So that was my Edgar Oliver. It's pretty good. You go back and listen right now, you'll be like, wow. So I was doing an Edgar Oliver, Chuck, because in T-minus like 4 days, yeah, it's going to be Halloween.
One of our favorite days.
And mind-blowingly enough, if you're listening to this on Halloween, it's today.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that works.
And last year, we did something unusual. So this year, we're doing it again, which makes it the usual.
Yeah.
But it was popular. People liked it. We read a great short story last year.
Yeah, people actually called for it again and said, oh, you're going to do it this year? I think some people might not have liked it, but just skip it then.
Yeah, we were like, does that mean we don't have to study? Okay, let's do that
exactly.
one.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's one in the can that's guaranteed going to be at least okay.
Yes.
So this year, Mr. Charles W. Chuck Bryant selected the story, and it is by someone you may or may not have heard of. He's a somewhat, you know, well-known writer. His name is Edgar Allan Poe.
Mm-hmm.
And he died in Baltimore, I believe, in the 1840s.
Sure.
He was one of the first great American writers of the 19th century.
/ drug addicts.
Big time drug addict. And I think alcoholic. That comes through a lot in this.
Yeah.
But we've selected a short story. Chuck selected a short story.
It's actually, I gave you a selection. You made the final choice.
Yeah, but you led me to it.
You
were like, which one of these would you like? And then you basically put this one in my hand.
No, actually, I was leaning toward the crazy dwarf that kills the king.
Well, what are we reading this one for?
Because this one's creepy.
Okay, all right.
I agreed.
Well, do you want to tell them the name of this one?
It's called Berenice. And I'll give you a slight setup just so you know what's going on.
Okay.
There's a woman called Berenice and a man. And they are cousins, and they are married, and things go a little weird in the story. Is that enough?
Weirder than cousins being married.
Yeah, I don't want to give anything away, but I just want you know, it's old English. It's not old English, but it's older than
it's
today's
old,
vernacular.
It's old American.
Yeah.
So before we lose any more listeners, let's get to it. You want to cue the spooky music?
Yeah, but we should also point out that at the end of this episode, we have a very special guest, so...
Let's not say who, although if you listen on Tuesday, you know.
But if you aren't into the reading, just go ahead and skip forward to the special guest, and you'll get some delight there.
Right. And if you do that, we apologize in advance.
Yes.
Either way.
All right.
So now, let's cue the spooky music.
Thank you.
Okay.
That sets the tone.
Let's dim the lights.
Okay.
And we now present to you Edgar Allan Poe's Berenice.
All right, Josh, there's a little quote at the beginning in Latin.
Mm-hmm. And in English.
I'll read the English. My companion said to me, if I would visit the grave of my friend, I might somewhat alleviate my worries.
Reasonable advice.
And here we go. Misery is manifold. The wretchedness of earth is multiform. Overreaching the wide horizon as the rainbow, its hues are as various as the hues of that arch. As distinct, too, yet as intimately blended. Overreaching the wide horizon as the rainbow. How is it that from beauty I have derived a type of unloveliness? From the covenant of peace, a simile of sorrow? But as in ethics, evil is a consequence of good, so, in fact, out of joy is sorrow born. Either the memory of past bliss is the anguish of today, or the agonies which are have their origin in the ecstasies which might have been.
Nice.
It sounded like improper English, but that's how he wrote it.
And it's not just today, it's today with a hyphen in between.
My baptismal name is Eugeus. That of my family I will not mention. Yet there are no towers in the land more time-honored than my gloomy, gray, hereditary halls. Our line has been called a race of visionaries, and in many striking particulars, in the character of the family mansion, in the frescoes of the chief saloon, in the tapestries of the dormitories, in the chiseling of some buttress in the armory, but more especially in the gallery of antique paintings, in the fashion of the library chamber, and lastly, in the very peculiar nature of the library's contents, there is more than sufficient evidence to warrant the belief.
The recollections of my earliest years are connected with that chamber, and with its volumes, of which latter I will say no more. Here died my mother, herein I was born. But it is mere idleness to say that I had not lived before, that the soul has no previous existence. You deny it? Let us not argue the matter. Convince myself I seek not to convince. There is, however, a remembrance of aerial forms, of spiritual and meaning eyes, of sounds musical yet sad, a remembrance which will not be excluded, a memory like a shadow, vague, variable, indefinite, unsteady, and like a shadow, too, in the impossibility of my getting rid of it while the sunlight of my reason shall exist. In that chamber I was born, thus awaking from the long night of what seemed but was not non-entity, at once into the very regions of fairyland, into a palace of imagination, into the wild dominions of monastic thought and erudition. It is not singular that I gazed around me with a startled and ardent eye, that I loitered away my boyhood in books and dissipated my youth in reverie, but it is singular that as the years rolled away, and the noon of manhood found me still in the mansion of my fathers, it is wonderful what stagnation there fell upon the springs of my life. Wonderful how total an inversion took place in the character of my commonest thought. The realities of the world affected me as visions, and as visions only, while the wild ideas of the land of dreams became in turn not the material of my everyday existence, but in very deed that existence utterly and solely in itself.
So he's getting a little caught up in his own obsessive thoughts, right?
He's a bookworm.
Okay.
He's bookish.
So the real world doesn't even matter to him at this point.
What he thinks of the real world.
Onward. Berenice and I were cousins, and we grew up together in my paternal halls. Yet differently we grew, I ill of health and buried in gloom, she agile, graceful, and overflowing with energy. Hers the ramble on the hillside, mine the studies of the cloister. I living within my own heart, an addicted body and soul to the most intense and painful meditation. She roaming carelessly through life with no thought of the shadows in her path, or the silent flight of the raven-winged hours. Berenice! I call upon her name. Berenice! From the gray ruins of memory, a thousand tumultuous recollections are startled at the sound. Ah! Vividly is her image before me now, as in the early days of her lightheartedness and joy. Oh! Gorgeous yet fantastic beauty. Oh! Sylph amid the shrubberies of Arnheim. Oh, naiad among its fountains. And then, all is mystery and terror, a tale which should not be told. Disease, a fatal disease, fell like the simoon upon her frame, and even while I gazed upon her, the spirit of change swept over her, pervading her mind, her habits, and her character, and in a manner the most subtle and terrible, disturbing even the identity of her person. Alas, the destroyer came and went, and the victim, where was she? I knew her not, or knew her no longer as Berenice. She got sick.
When I first read him saying Berenice, Berenice, I thought of Kramer going Pam, Pam. You remember that one?
Yeah. All right. So Berenice isn't doing so hot all of a sudden.
No, it happened like that too.
Yep.
Among the numerous train of maladies superinduced by that fatal and primary one which affected a revolution of so horrible a kind in the moral and physical being of my cousin, may be mentioned as the most distressing and obstinate in its nature, a species of epilepsy not infrequently terminating in trance itself, trance very nearly resembling positive dissolution, and from which her manner of recovery was in most instances startlingly abrupt. In the meantime, my own disease, for I have been told that I should call it by no other appellation, my own disease then grew rapidly upon me, and assumed finally a monomaniac character of a novel and extraordinary form, hourly and momently gaining vigor, and at length obtaining over me the most incomprehensible ascendancy. This monomania, if I must so term it, consisted in a morbid irritability of those properties of the mind in metaphysical science termed the attentive. It is more than probable that I am not understood, but I fear, indeed, that it is in no matter possible to convey to the mind of the merely general reader an adequate idea of that nervous intensity of interest with which, in my case, the powers of meditation, not to speak technically, busied and buried themselves in the contemplation of even the most ordinary objects of the universe.
So now he's becoming obsessive about just things.
Anything.
Transfixed on things.
But like he can't even get across how obsessed he becomes.
Monomania. All right. To muse for long unwearied hours with my attention riveted to some frivolous device on the margin or in the topography of a book, to become absorbed for the better part of a summer's day in a quaint shadow falling aslant upon the tapestry or upon the door, to lose myself for an entire night in watching the steady flame of a lamp or the embers of a fire, to dream away whole days over the perfume of a flower, to repeat monotonously some common word until the sound, by dint of frequent repetition, ceased to convey any idea whatever to the mind. Everyone does that.
Yeah, it's called Vujade.
Awesome. To lose all sense of motion or physical existence by means of absolute bodily quiescence long and obstinately persevered in. Such were a few of the most common and least pernicious vagaries induced by a condition of the mental faculties, not indeed altogether unparalleled, but certainly bidding defiance to anything like analysis or explanation.
You did good. That was a tough one.
Thanks. He sounds like an opium head. You know?
He's like, and by the way, I'm high as a kite right now.
I'm staring at a lamp for 2 days.
Yet let me not be misapprehended. This due, earnest, and morbid attention thus excited by objects in their own nature frivolous must not be confounded in character with that ruminating propensity common to all mankind, and more especially indulged in by persons of ardent imagination. It was not even, as might be at first supposed, an extreme condition or exaggeration of such propensity, but primarily and essentially distinct and different. In the one instance, the dreamer or enthusiast, being interested by an object usually not frivolous, imperceptibly loses sight of this object in a wilderness of deductions and suggestions issuing therefrom, until, at the conclusion of a daydream often replete with luxury, he finds the insedimentum, or first cause of his musings, entirely vanished and forgotten. In my case, the primary object was invariably frivolous, although assuming, through the medium of my distempered vision, a refracted and unreal importance. Few deductions, if any, were made, and those few pertinaciously returning in upon the original object as a center. The meditations were never pleasurable, and at the termination of the reverie, the first cause, so far from being out of sight, had attained that supernaturally exaggerated interest which was the prevailing feature of the disease. In a word, The powers of mind more particularly exercised were, with me, as I have said before, the attentive, and are with the daydreamer, the speculative.
Anything? Thoughts?
No, he's just going on to say it was really serious stuff.
Yeah, they'd like to really describe things back then.
Yeah.
Okay. My books at this epoch, if they did not actually serve to irritate the disorder, partook. It will be perceived largely in their imaginative and inconsequential nature of the characteristic qualities of the disorder itself. I will remember, among others, the treatise of the noble Italian Coelius Secundus Curio, De Amplitudine Beate Regni Dei. St. Austin's great work, The City of God, and Terulium De Carne Christi, in which the paradoxical sentence, Mortus est Dei, filius, credibile est quia ineptum est sepultus resurrect exit, certum est quia impossibile est.
Nice.
Occupied my undivided time for many weeks of laborious and fruitless investigation. So he's getting hung up on these phrases from the books.
Yeah.
Like I am.
The Latin.
Thus it will appear that, shaken from its balance only by trivial things, my reason bore resemblance to that ocean crag spoken of by Ptolemy Hephaestion, which, steadily resisting the attacks of human violence and the fiercer fury of the waters and the kinds, trembled only the touch of the flower called Asphodel. And although, to a careless thinker, it might appear a matter beyond doubt that the alteration produced by her unhappy malady and the moral condition of Berenice would afford me many objects for the exercise of that intense and abnormal meditation whose nature I have been at some trouble in explaining, yet such was not in any degree the case. In the lucid intervals of my infirmity, her calamity indeed gave me pain, and taking deeply to the heart that total wreck of her fair and gentle life, I did not fall to ponder frequently and bitterly upon the wonder-working means by which so strange a revolution had been so suddenly brought to pass. But these reflections partook not of the idiosyncrasy of my disease, and were such as would have occurred, under similar circumstances, to the ordinary mass of mankind. True to its own character, my disorder reveled in less important but more startling changes wrought in the physical frame of Berenice, and the singular and most appalling distortion of her personal identity. During the brightest days of her unparalleled beauty, most surely I had never loved her. In the strange anomaly of my existence, feelings with me had never been of the heart, and my passions always were of the mind. Through the gray of the early morning, among the trellis shadows of the forest at noonday, and in the silence of my library at night, she had flitted by my eyes, and I had seen her, not as a living and breathing Berenice, but as the Berenice of a dream. Not as a being of the earth, earthy, but as the abstraction of such a being, not as a thing to admire, but to analyze, not as an object of love, but as the theme of the most abstruse, although desultory, speculation. And now I shuddered in her presence and grew pale at her approach, yet bitterly lamenting her fallen and desolate condition, I called to mind that she had loved me long, and in an evil moment, I spoke to her of marriage. I'm getting oddly Madonna-esque here with my English. Yeah.
Does she speak strangely?
You know, when she married Guy Ritchie, all of a sudden she started talking like Madonna.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And not like she was from Queens or wherever she's from.
You're not supposed to do that. You got to remember who you are, you know?
Agreed.
And at length the period of our nuptials was approaching when, upon an afternoon in the winter of the year, one of those unseasonably warm, calm, and misty days which are the nurse of the beautiful Halcyon, I sat, as I thought, alone, in the inner apartment of my library. But uplifting my eyes, I saw that Berenice stood before me. Was it my own excited imagination, or the misty influence of the atmosphere, or the uncertain twilight of the chamber, or the gray draperies which fell around her figure, that caused in it so vacillating and indistinct an outline?
Or was it all the opium and absinthe?
He likes to have a lot of different ideas to choose from.
Sure.
I could not tell. She spoke no word. I, not for worlds could I have uttered a syllable. An icy chill ran through my frame. A sense of insufferable anxiety oppressed me. A consuming curiosity pervaded my soul, and sinking back upon the chair, I remained for some time breathless and motionless, with my eyes riveted upon her person. Alas, its emaciation was excessive, and not one vestige of the former being lurked in any single line of the contour. My burning glances at length fell upon the face. The forehead was high and very pale, and singularly placid, and the once jetty hair fell partially over it, and overshadowed the hollow temples with innumerable ringlets, now of a vivid yellow, and jarring discordantly in their fantastic character with the reigning melancholy of the countenance. The eyes were lifeless and lusterless and seemingly pupilless, and I shrank involuntarily from their glassy stare to the contemplation of the thin and shrunken lips. They parted, and in a smile of peculiar meaning, the teeth of the changed Berenice disclosed themselves slowly to my view. Would to God that I had never beheld them, or that having done so, I had died.
Berenice is in bad shape here.
So is the guy.
The shutting of the door disturbed me, and looking up, I found that my cousin had departed from the chamber. But from the disordered chamber of my brain had not, alas, departed, and would not be driven away, the white and ghastly spectrum of the teeth. Not a speck on their surface, not a shade on their enamel, not an indenture in their edges. But what that period of her smile had sufficed to brand in upon my memory. I saw them now even more unequivocally than I beheld them then. The teeth! The teeth! They were here and there and everywhere. Invisibly and palpably before me, long, narrow, and excessively white, with the pale lips writhing about them, as in the very moment of their first terrible development. Then came the full fury of my monomania, as I struggled in vain against a strange and irresistible influence. In the multiplied objects of the external world, I had no thoughts but for the teeth. For these I longed with a frenzied desire. All other matters and all different interests became absorbed in their single contemplation. They alone were present to the mental eye, and they, in their sole individuality, became the essence of my mental life. I held them in every light. I turned them in every attitude. I surveyed their characteristics. I dwelt upon their peculiarities. I pondered upon their conformation. I mused upon the alteration in their nature. I shuddered as I assigned to them an imagination, a sensitive and sentient power, and even when unassisted by the lips, a capability of moral expression. Boy, he's losing it. Of Madcel Salé has been well said, que tu sais pas un chien de sentient. And of Berenice, I more seriously believed, que tu sais bien un décidis. Décidis. And I believe that translates to something like,
The ideas,
all of his ideas were of the teeth, something like that.
And he just had to say it in French, didn't he?
Well,
he's like, this isn't that good, so I'm going to write it in French.
If I went to a French speaker in the office and they were like, dude, this is really like hard to translate. So if anyone knows that, please send it.
Do you want to read it again? That part? The line?
Sure. Que tu sais pas Etienne des sentiments. Que tu sais d'un étien des idées. All right. Ah, here was the idiotic thought that destroyed me. Des idées. Ah, therefore, it was that I coveted them so madly. I felt that their possession could alone ever restore me to peace in giving me back to reason.
So, Chuck, what's going on here? Like, there's teeth now? He's got teeth and he's focused on the teeth?
Well, no, the teeth are in her mouth. She is disintegrating physically except for her teeth, which remain perfect.
Okay.
So now he is hyper-focused and obsessed with her teeth because they're so perfect.
I would be hyper-focused on running out of the room at this point.
I would too.
Okay. And the evening closed in upon me thus, and then the darkness came, and tarried, and went, and the day again dawned. And the mists of a second night were now gathering around, and still I sat motionless in that solitary room, and still I sat buried in meditation, and still the phantasma of the teeth maintained its terrible ascendancy as, with the most vivid, hideous distinctness, it floated amid the changing lights and shadows of the chamber. At length there broke in upon my dreams a cry of horror and dismay, and thereunto, after a pause, succeeded the sound of troubled voices, intermingled with many low moanings of sorrow or pain. I arose from my seat and, throwing open one of the doors of the library, saw standing out in the antechamber a servant maiden, all in tears, who told me that Berenice was no more. She had been seized with epilepsy in the early morning, and now, at the closing in of the night, the grave was ready for its tenant, and all the preparations for the burial were completed.
So Berenice is dead?
Yes.
Okay.
I found myself sitting in the library and again sitting there alone. It seemed that I had newly awakened from a confused and exciting dream. I knew that it was now midnight, and I was well aware that since the setting of the sun, Berenice had been interred. But of that dreary period which intervened, I had no positive, at least no definite, comprehension. Yet its memory was replete with horror, horror more horrible from being vague, and terror more terrible from ambiguity. It was a fearful page in the record, my existence, written all over with dim and hideous and unintelligible recollections. I strived to decipher them, but in vain, while ever and anon, like the spirit of a departed sound, the shrill and piercing shriek of a female voice seemed to be ringing in my ears. I had done a deed. What was it? I asked myself the question aloud, and the whispering echoes of the chamber answered me. What was it?
All right, so he's awoken from a fever dream, and he's like, something, I've done something here while I slept that's, yeah, that ain't good.
Yeah.
What was it? On the table beside me burned a lamp, and near it lay a little box. That can't be good. It was of no remarkable character, and I had seen it frequently before, for it was the property of the family physician. But how it came there upon my table, and why did I shudder in regarding it? These things were in no manner to be accounted for, and my eyes at length dropped to the open pages of a book, and to the sentence underscored therein. The words were the singular but simple ones of the poet Ibn Zayyat. My companion said to me, if I would visit the grave of my friend, I might somewhat alleviate my worries. Why then, as I perused them, did the hairs of my head erect themselves on end, and the blood of my body become congealed within my veins? There came a light tap at the library door. And as pale as the tenant of the tomb, a menial entered upon tiptoe. His looks were wild with terror, and he spoke to me in a voice tremulous, husky, and very low. What said he? Some broken sentences I had heard. He told of a wild cry disturbing the silence of the night, of the gathering together of the household, of a search in the direction of the sound, and then his tones grew thrillingly distinct as he whispered me of a violated grave, of a disfigured body enshrouded, yet still breathing, still palpitating, still alive.
He pointed to garments. They were muddy and clotted with gore. I spoke not, and he took me gently by the hand. It was indented with the impress of human nails. He directed my attention to some object against the wall. I looked at it for some minutes. It was a spade. With a shriek, I bounded to the table and grasped the box that lay upon it. But I could not force it open, and in my tremor it slipped from my hands and fell heavily and burst into pieces. And from it, with a rattling sound, there rolled out some instruments of dental surgery, intermingled with 32 small, white, and ivory-looking substances that were scattered to and fro about the floor.
The end. Wow. That's, guy, I just got a little chill, actually, and I knew the ending.
He liked his teeth.
Did he dig her up, or was she still alive?
I don't know. I was thrown off by the fact that...
shrieking woman?
Yeah, she's still palpitating, as it were. Still alive.
I think he hallucinated the whole thing in that she did not die and was buried. I think he went into her chamber and removed her teeth while she was alive.
Or maybe he, while he was in his little opium dream, mm-hmm, buried her alive, Then decided, oh, yeah, the teeth went back,
right.
Got them out of her mouth while she's still alive, and took them back to the library. I think he needs to lay off the dope is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
So, happy Halloween. I hope everybody is appropriately nervous now, right?
Yeah. And if you have ideas on royalty-free readings that we can do next year.
Yeah, we'll bring this up again like in August or something like that.
Agreed.
So stick around. We are not going anywhere just yet. We have a special, you could almost call this a two-parter.
Mm-hmm.
The second part is a special guest, right?
That's
We're
right.
not going to do listener mail or anything. We're going to do this.
That's right. Happy Halloween, everybody.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
So since this is a Halloween episode, and since, as you may remember from Tuesday, John Hodgman has been hanging around the office this week.
I saw him sleeping in a cubicle earlier.
I know. It's weird.
Yeah.
I got locked out of my
Oh, he's here again.
Of my safe room. Yeah.
Okay.
So, Hodgman, how you doing?
Liz. I don't get the chimes.
Well, sure.
I haven't finished the introduction yet. We're not doing listener mail this week
right.
because it's special. This was a Halloween episode, and because Hodgman's here.
Yeah.
So instead, we're going to do stuff with John Hodgman.
That's right. And the reason John's here is because he decided to surprise us, and he had a ticket to the show.
Yep.
We decided to honor that ticket.
Yep. Look. I feel a little bad about last week because I came in and interrupted Sarah's letter.
That was weird.
And those letters.
That was this week.
Whatever it was.
We took care of Sarah. Don't worry.
You know what?
About her.
I don't pay attention to time anymore. I'm a deranged millionaire.
Okay.
I like Sarah. I like the letters she writes. I like all the letters.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a listener too. You know, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
And when am I going to have my say?
Do you
know what I mean?
And no one ever comes in to do their listener mail in person. Like, you bought a ticket to do so.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I have access. It's time for me to have my say. Here's my listener mail.
All right.
Nice work, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's nice listener mail.
Edgar Allan Poe, huh?
Yeah.
That was Chuck's.
Well, that
was Poe. No, it's not mine.
You say it was Poe-rific?
It was Poe-rific.
I say it was Poe-er. No, I like Edgar Allan Poe fine.
Well, sure. Yeah, you gotta like him.
You know, guys, I wrote this new book of complete world knowledge called That Is All that's coming out. And this is the third book of complete world knowledge. And in my previous books of complete world knowledge, I talked about everything, right? I talked about how to tie all kinds of knots. No, I never did. For some reason, I think I did.
That was so close. I almost said, like, yeah.
I talked about hobos. I talked about mole men. I talked about the presidents of the United States. Mm-hmm. I talked about the mottos and nicknames of all 51 American states. I talked about history. I talked about the future. But there was one topic that I never took on before, and that was sports.
Yeah.
Because I am not a sports fan.
See, I find that surprising.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you and I co-hosted a trivia event at Max FunCon.
And yeah.
We did our own little fun trivia.
Akeem
where
Olajuwon.
Right. I did some sports questions that you were not privy to.
To humiliate me.
You did some science fiction
nerd
movie
questions
that I, because I'm not into that.
You did jock questions to humiliate me.
Yes.
And I did nerd questions to humiliate you.
And it went great.
It went great. We were both humiliated.
That's right.
And that is usually the sign of a good night.
Yes, it is.
But here's the thing. For this third book, because we are reaching the end of human civilization, December 21st, 2012,
at 11:11 a.m.
Exactly. And it's time for me to engage in, well, like the dying person, I reach out to that which I previously spurned in life, mm-hmm. like religion and mm-hmm. sports.
Right.
So I decided to learn a lot about sports and to write about sports in this new book. And one of the things I learned, which I didn't know until now, you guys probably know this, that the Baltimore Ravens is named after the Edgar Allan Poe poem. Raven.
Right.
See, I didn't know that.
Actually.
You didn't know that?
No.
I didn't know that.
I knew that.
And now that makes more sense. I didn't realize why they had Edgar Allan Poe as their mascot.
They have
some dude dressed up as in like 19th century. And he's got one of those big heads on, like a big Edgar Allan Poe head. Right. I was like, why is that? And then I finally got it. Edgar Allan Poe, apparently got ruinously drunk in Baltimore, as he did in every East Coast city for a period of time. They all, for some reason, claim him as their son.
Well, mm-hmm.
Philadelphia, New York, Brooklyn, Baltimore.
Providence.
And but only Baltimore had the nerve to name their team after a famous quasi-literary kind of dum-dum poem that the French really like. And they have this mascot, which is great. Now I understand why they have that mascot. This dude dressed up as Edgar Allan Poe with a giant Edgar Allan Poe head on top of him that's filled with brandy. Now it makes sense.
And John Cusack, to bring it full circle, is playing Poe in a movie.
I know.
Which is a little weird.
He's only the latest who wanted to play Edgar Allan Poe, of course.
Sure.
Sylvester Stallone was developing an Edgar Allan Poe biopic for years. 4 years. You didn't know that? Foreigner was going to do the theme song. They wrote Eye of the Tiger for that movie.
That was Survivor.
Oh, sorry.
Foreigner feels like the first Poe.
I apologize. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Survivor. Right. They wrote Eye of the Tiger for the Edgar Allan Poe movie, but when it didn't get made, they used it for Rocky III instead.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Sports and more sports. Punching is a sport, right?
Pugilism, that is a thinking man's sport.
Oh, no, I agree. That's the sweet science.
Yes.
That's the intricate logical art of hurting someone in the face.
Right, exactly.
I get it.
Hold on, you're leaving out a big element.
Right.
Trying to not get hurt in your own face.
Right, that's practically...
You're doing two things at once.
Yeah, that's ballet.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's an intricate dance. That's like ultimate fighting.
Yeah, I'm
two half-naked guys down on the ground trying to knee fighting. Each other in the neck.
Right.
Yeah. It's acrobatic.
I see you at a boxing match, though, Hodgman.
I was in a boxing match.
I've seen that. Yes, TV. You were.
I was in a fake boxing match.
Was that choreographed? Was that staged? It looked a lot like the director's, like, you two just go at each other, and we'll see what happens.
This was in an episode of Bored to Death.
Right, with you boxed Jason Schwartz.
I did, yeah. Right. And I realized then that it is an extremely physically taxing thing to do. I do not mean to run down boxers in the least, because first of all they will kill me. Second of all, what they do, they are extremely accomplished athletes.
Oh, yeah.
I have no problem with athletes, you understand.
Sure.
I think they're incredibly skilled people whom I wish only not to hurt me. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But they are artists in their own way. And I don't even dislike sports per se. Like, there are some sports that I occasionally will watch. I dig a curling match from time to time.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Any sport with a broom, I like. It is the presupposition in our culture that everyone must like sports. And that if you do not know what the sports teams are or what they do on the field,
and something is wrong with you,
then you are abnormal in some way. And I think that that's a little bit, that presumes too much.
Well, John, that's the world we live in.
But it's changing. Now, Baltimore got the Ravens in, what, 1996 or 7 or something like that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So they named their team after a poem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's like, no big deal. Not a big deal. Who cares, right? But this year, we got some baseball. What's the baseball player who named his bat Orchrist?
I didn't know that happened.
Yeah. Oh, it's in the news.
Oh, yeah?
Someone will write about it and send it in.
Okay.
It was this April. It was revealed that a very popular baseball player named his bat Orchrist after one of the elven-forged swords in The Hobbit.
Huh. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Right? And then, guess what? Have you noticed this? You notice Nick Mangold, the center for the New York Jets?
Yeah.
Have you noticed, like, he's not wearing a helmet anymore?
I have not noticed that.
It's surprising to me. He came out in one of the games earlier this year. He was wearing a leather top hat with, like, goggles on it. Did you notice that?
I did not notice that. On the field?
On the field.
Wow.
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. But it's weird. And then another time he came out and he was wearing a pith helmet with a jeweler's lens on it.
That at least
and he came out on the field on a penny farthing bicycle.
What is going on? Are you? What?
It was a steam powered penny farthing bicycle.
Wow.
Which
was it of his own design and manufacture?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then he went on a sports program, a radio program, much like this. This is radio, right?
Yeah. Sure.
It's kind of.
And he was saying, I'm really glad we won that game. And they said, well, what do you think? To what do you attribute your win? And he said, I just took the lesson of Admiral Akbar to heart and realized that they were setting a trap. Isn't that weird?
That is weird.
Very weird. What do you think's going on there?
I think this is it, guys. I think this is happening.
Is this the beginning?
The beginning of the nerd jock convergence. You see it all around us.
Wow.
I think Nick Mangold may be the one.
Yeah, it's
the person
like
who's going to join these two worlds together.
Yeah.
He's doing steampunk cosplay. He's quoting Admiral Akbar.
Yeah.
He's riding
a penny farthing.
A penny farthing motorcycle. Not just a steam powered penny farthing motorcycle of his own design. And I recently, you know how my Zeppelin hubris is in ruins?
The HZ hubris.
Adrian Zeppelin's hubris. But I just got an offer on it. Did you know that?
I didn't know
that. Isn't that weird? I mean, it's still crashed. It's still, I think parts of it are still burning in Central Park right now.
And this happened since Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Maybe this person heard the podcast. I don't know what it is. But the offer came in. It's a good offer, too, from Mangold Steampunk Industries.
It's got to be the same one.
/ football.
Oh, well, yeah.
See, I think it might be him.
Are you selling it to him as is?
Well, I'm not putting that thing back together. It's on fire.
Okay.
It burned my hands. Yes. I hope it works.
Where is it? Over Chiefs Meadow or?
I don't know. Most of the top half of Central Park. I mean, it was big.
Okay. Wow.
It was big.
Most of the top half.
Yeah. I haven't been up there in a while.
Good.
It crashed and burned. Probably 2 years ago.
And still, oh, yeah, it's still burning?
Yeah.
Wow.
I should do something about that.
Well, John, let me ask you, I mean, that seems like one of the great divisions in life, in the world, that's been going on forever, is this division between jocks and nerds. It seems like it's a good thing if things come together, is it not?
I don't know. I think like all major sea changes, it's unnerving.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think those of us...
I'm scared of things, too.
I think those of us on the nerd side have been defining ourselves by our marginalization for so long that it may be hard for us to accept a world where, you know, that TV show Community did a whole Dungeons & Dragons episode. Superhero movies are the only movies that people make now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
all of the things, and now I think at least 10 people in the United States know who Doctor Who is now. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Comic-Con is big, big business. And I think that all of these things that we used to hold as badges and use to comfort ourselves in our marginalization in culture are now being absorbed into, you know, the monoculture as a whole. And there is no greater expression of the monoculture than jock culture, which is the great leveling cross-cultural unifying thing that men and a lot of women talk about, unless they're a nerd like me, right? So when that's gone, I think that will bother nerds very much.
Oh, yeah.
It makes us nervous.
Yeah, I could see that, but
I don't think the jocks give a hoot at all.
No, and jocks tend to get their way as far as society goes,
gonna,
right?
Yeah.
If they want something. If Mick Mangold wants to make steampunk mainstream.
Hey, I like your steampunk culture. Give me that, nerd. That's
right.
Mine.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. They take
this
what
mine.
They want.
This is mine now. Hey, your steampunk Iron Man armor that you made yourself, that's mine now. Drop it off in my locker.
Throw a Jets jersey on top of it.
Yeah. I'm going to put a Jets jersey on top of it. It's going to be steampunk Iron Man Jets. No, that's not what Mick Mangold does not talk like that at all. He's a very sweet guy. I met him. That's why I hope he buys my Zeppelin.
So,
in real life, Mick Mangold's Twitter avatar is an illustration of him as an Ewok.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I've seen
it. So you may say that what I'm putting in my book is crazy. But look around you, everybody. It's coming true. All
well, John, thank you for coming by with your baffling prediction.
You don't have to thank me. It's very easy. I just walked down the hallway from my safe room.
Are you going to stay here because the weekend's approaching?
I need someone to kick down the door of my safe room because I fell asleep in that cubicle because I went out and I accidentally armed the system.
Okay.
So if you have an intern or someone who can go in there, they will be gassed.
Oh, no, Jerry.
Yeah.
She's got a foot of lead.
Okay.
She can also breathe.
Yeah, but there are booby traps. There will be gas. There will be darts. There will be snakes.
She's fine.
She's pretty good at
she's
stuff
great.
Like that.
There will be a giant rolling boulder.
Mm-hmm.
She's got that covered.
Good. If we could get that, then I can get back in there, and then I'll be back again.
Jerry deals with us on a day-to-day basis. She can handle any boulders or poison darts.
You know what? You're right.
Yeah.
Here's to you, Jerry.
We'll send Jerry in.
Yeah.
I
don't see Jerry.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global. Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
So John's book is That Is All, and it is coming out November 1st, and you can pre-order it right now.
Using the internet.
Using the internet.
And I hope that you will.
At a variety of internet sites.
Wow, you really just plugged the heck out of that, Chuck.
Well, you know, I want the guy to sell a book or two.
No, I'm just happy to be here. As a listener, as a deranged millionaire, I'm happy to come in here and take over your listener mail segment.
And as a resident of
And as a resident of How Stuff Works yes. Plaza.
Well, to those of you who made it all the way through this podcast and you're with us right now, I want to say on behalf of myself, Chuck, and Mr. John Hodgman, happy Halloween. Be safe. Please don't get hit by a car.
Dress your children in skeleton costumes and send them out into the street.
The end.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join How Stuff Works staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.